Welcome, sports fans, to this week's edition of the Windmill Sports Show, coming to you live on ESPN 94.5 FM. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline. What's going on, Josh?
Ken, how you doing?
Good, bud. That's all you got, Ken. How you doing? Yeah, it's a whole new year.
Your voice, well, and the first weekend of, got NFL playoffs and the college football championship. It's a big first weekend of football.
I'm excited about everything right now. John the Hawk Stevens, independent handicapper.
Thank you.
Okay, how you doing, bud?
Great.
So, that's good, John. So, where do you guys want to start? Let's talk. I mean, obviously Nevada. Right before we came on the air, we talked a little bit about the Nevada basketball team going to New Mexico tomorrow, and the line came out. And I asked you guys what you thought it was. Josh, you must have read my post on, or did you already know?
Yeah, I already knew 14.
And John didn't. And John actually,
I didn't know. That's...
John did not know. And when I said it, he about spit up his 805. Paxton. All I remember is I remember two things preseason. We were watching the Jordan Brown. Sweepstakes, wondering if Jordan's going to come here. It's down to a couple of teams, and I remember the New Mexico fans, and I remember the San Diego State fans just talking all kinds of trash, saying you guys are overrated, you're overhyped, we can't wait till you come here, especially New Mexico, just saying we got our transfers coming in and all that stuff. And the line came out, and think about this: we just punked Utah State at home, probably the second best team in the conference.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
From the preseason, yeah.
Yeah, punked.
Absolutely.
And so we're going on the road to New Mexico State.
Without being in rhythm offense yet.
Yes. We're laying 14 tomorrow at New Mexico. 14!
A game that we all agree there's a chance they lose the game outright.
I guess. Exactly, John.
I thought the line would be exactly half that. I thought it was going to be 7.
7 on the road.
And which would still be substantial. You put 2 touchdowns on it. I mean, I don't know. I got to be on the Lobos here.
I look at it.
You can dominate a team at the Pit and not win by 14.
Last year they played in Nevada. Nevada was a 14-point favorite, the total 156.
Yeah,
and I do believe, John, that was the game that Jordan Brown came to Nevada on an official visit.
Yes.
And the Pack gets the victory. The Pack was pretty much – They're up 34-42 at halftime, and in the second half, New Mexico made a charge, outscored them 40-35 in the second half, and the Pack came out with a 77-74 victory. So they're laying 14. What team's better, John and Josh? Do you think this year's Nevada team is better or last year's Nevada team?
Well, this year's.
This year's, okay. So we were laying 14 at home, so we have a better team going to the Pit laying 14. That's just crazy.
Yeah, well, you realize, I'm sure you have the results, but the key factor there is New Mexico's having a bit of a down year. They had a lot of turnover, and I looked early in the year, I saw them getting similarly some high numbers at home. I thought, geez, are they worth, an underdog play here? But I saw the results, and they were getting stomped pretty good. There was one game I was glad, I will say it was against Arizona. I believe that's who it was, but I was glad I didn't, jump on them because they were getting like 6 or 7 points at home, and they got routed. And then I saw they were coming back, and they were a little more competitive, but compared to their usual level of play where they're pretty competitive and can sneak up on people and sometimes compete for the upper echelon of the conference, they're down by comparison, right, Ken? So you have all their numbers in terms of record and everything.
7-6 on the year, 3-4 at home. Against the spread, they're 4-8. They've had 12 totals posted for the New Mexico games, and they went 6-6 versus the spread.
It's not a good thing that they're down. It's a real bad thing for Nevada.
You
count on New Mexico and San Diego State and UNLV, Fresno, Boise to be good, but they're not. And this is a one-bid league unless
the Pack stumbles in the tournament.
Yeah, exactly. Or this team gets hot or San Diego State gets hot, something like that. It's not good for Nevada at all. And that's some of the detractors towards Nevada point that out, that this is not a Mountain West that it was earlier in the decade when it was a four. I think they had a 5-bid year once, if I'm not mistaken. And it's not a good thing. You want New Mexico to be good. You want the Pit to be the Pit. But laying 14 on the road, that's unheard of.
It's crazy. And the total, William hasn't posted it yet, but I did a little research, and the total's going to come out. There's another stat that I found out today, too, that I found interesting. I'm going to give you guys just a second. The total's going to come out about 157, 158. So I can see that because all New Mexico's going to want to run. But, I tell you what, Johnny, you said the same thing.
You can want to run all you want against this defense.
That's where I was headed. This defense, from what I saw early in the year, from what I see right now, this defense is lights out. They're ranked number 42 in defensive rebounds and number 42 in opponents' defensive field goal percentage. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it, Cody just dominated that game on the defensive end, especially. It's just their transition game. Once you get that turnover into the transition game, it's over. There's nobody that can compete with them, and I mean nobody. It's something to watch. If that offense ever catches up, which I think it will.
It will.
I think it will. And when it does, I mean, this is a good time to do it come league time. The sky is literally the limit.
I absolutely agree. You know, I was a fortunate enough. I had Budweiser give me a courtside ticket, so we got to sit right there on the first row, right there. I mean, and right on the court. And you know, I loved it so much because I got to listen to the talking that the Pack had about where people are, switches, and things of that nature. So it was absolutely fantastic. And like you guys said, you know, the stat that I did come across, John and Josh, was that. They posted 13. The Pack's 14-0, 8-4 against the spread. They, you know, last 10, obviously 10-0 because they're undefeated. But for the total, what do you think their total over versus the over and under and betting wise in 13 games? What do you think the Pack is against over?
I think it's a majority unders.
3-10.
Yeah,
that surprised me. I didn't realize that.
I didn't know it would be that drastic, but yeah, it makes sense. Just. They're not putting the ball in the hole, and they're keeping the other team from doing it. So it makes perfect sense.
Well, and Ken, the whole kind of change in mentality has been kind of interesting to see because you remember the first couple of games were pretty exciting, but Coach Musselman in every press conference said, you know what, you know, he called it probably a little too sarcastically the worst defensive team in the country. It was like, oh, great, you know, we're winning these games, whatever, 92-82. It's fun to watch because I'm scared to death, you know, the way we look on the defensive end. It's clear that's been addressed, but it's kind of funny how quickly, because here we are at the midpoint of the season, from him saying that you knew it was going to be a point of emphasis, and now, yeah, they're practically looking like Wisconsin out there. I mean, they're winning
Seriously,
games 65-45. Virginia. Yeah, exactly. You're just talking about the defense needing to be addressed. Well, it has been.
Holding Utah State to under 49 points.
And now, but now yeah. You hear his concern. He says, yeah, actually, we've lost our flowing offense. How do we get both, you know, elements to coincide? It's like, geez, now we've lost a little of what seems like the up-tempo we like to have and the identity. So how do we get that back? So now we're going to see if they can recover that. Having said that, to have those struggles, so to speak, notwithstanding, and you're still undefeated, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, if Mus has to choose, I think he'll choose the defense every time. But it'll be scary once they get that going. It really is.
Who do you compare us to, John? I mean, with the lockdown style defense, like the Virginia defense, uh-huh. versus the offense is clicking right now. But what we want to execute, how we want to execute
the old UNLV teams, the Amoeba defense, not quite to that level, not quite to the 40 minutes of hell, Nolan Richardson.
Yeah,
they don't press as much as those teams do, but
we're like a token press.
Yeah, they'll do it, and they do it in spurts, and they do it at opportune times and to create turnovers and change the flow of the momentum and everything. And I mean, I'd like comparing them to those old Rebel teams because I think that's where their ceiling it really is. They can reach these lofty goals. I mean, the Big West at that point wasn't as good as this Mountain West is right now. So it's, you know, I don't know if we're Larry Johnson and Stacey Augman good, but they're right there, man.
It's and I saw another stat, guys. You know, there was the average age of the starting five for the Nevada Wolfpack is older than the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, that's amazing. it's just amazing.
You were talking about an NBA team. I mean, the average age of the starting five for the Nevada Wolfpack is older than the Phoenix Suns, Josh.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, you're talking about 5-year seniors.
Pretty crazy stat.
And then we just had another guy commit this year or this week, you know, another transfer coming in.
2020, I saw.
From Pitt. Well, he's coming in, has to sit out.
Yeah.
And then
Duquesne, yeah.
From Pitt and Duquesne.
Yeah, yeah, the same city.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Jody Clark actually Facebooked me, and he goes, "What is going on in Nevada?"
Yeah.
I didn't say what I wanted. I'm not going to say it on the radio because we're sports handicapping.
So your football team's garbage, so everyone's leaving.
Yeah, so with that being said, you know, fantastic. You know, that game is, what's it, a 5 o'clock game tomorrow? Is that right, guys?
Yeah, 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock game. Let's see if I got anything on it. Like I said, we played them in New Mexico, or at Nevada, 77-74 last year, with Nevada being a 14-point home favorite. Total was 156, so it came dog and under in that game. We're going on the road this year laying 14. Looks like the total, from the research I've done, William Hill has not quite posted yet. They post the totals tomorrow. They usually don't post overnight totals. But with that being said, I, you know, from what I've seen offshore and stuff, I think it's going to come about 157. So what's your prediction, Josh?
Well, Ken, yeah, I mean, there's so many points. I think you'd have to lean toward, you know, the underdog if you're picking the spread. We'll see. 14's so high, I wouldn't be surprised if it being an opening number. People jump on that. Even home underdogs that aren't very good are always right. I wouldn't be surprised by tomorrow. We're already seeing 11.5, 12. But Ken, you mentioned, what teams does this remind you of? Got me thinking, like, just the general mentality and the way they play. And you know what? I got to thinking over the past few years, at least, it reminds me of the Villanova style.
Oh,
you know, with championships they won. If you think about, though, how those teams were identified, like, by and large, they were known for, you know, highlights offensively, for being a good, fast-paced team. But when they were at their best, it was on the defensive end. Villanova also shut teams out. You look at Michigan in last year's national championship game, and even North Carolina, the first time they won, they won that with a much slower tempo than North Carolina wanted to play. And so it's one of those things where, like, you know, their true identity sort of hides behind what they're known for. I think it's what you get for Nevada. I mean, I think nationally people are aware of the Martin brothers, Jordan Caroline. They know, you know, it's kind of a star power, you know, lineup that Nevada has. I'm not sure everyone's aware of how they're doing it on the defensive end.
You know, talk about defensive stoppers, John. You were saying that Cody was doing good. How about this Trayshawn Thurman kid?
Yeah.
The block that he had the other night
was
they bailed him out.
Yep.
And that got nothing but ball. And that guy is 6'11". They say he's probably going to be the freshman of the year. And he just absolutely went up. That guy was going to tomahawk it. Trayshawn Thurman met him at the rim. Nothing but ball. I even posted on Twitter. I said that block was
a freshman versus a full-grown man.
Yeah,
right there.
And I said that guy walking to the bus was looking behind his back, afraid that Trayshawn was lurking, because he absolutely destroyed him in that block.
He's a great
defender.
He's a great glue guy that he can post up and he can hit the outside shot. And he's always going to be there on defense, and he's always going to be a great help defender, I've noticed. So that's a really good fit in that offense.
Yeah, I like
and defense, obviously.
Yeah, and Jordan Brown's getting more playing time. The kid can't buy a bucket. He's getting point blank shots that are halfway down and popping
out. Rebounder.
He's a good rebounder, and he's a great passer. What I've noticed that when he's big, there was a couple times against Utah State where he got the ball down low, and he's got guys cutting to the lane, and he's big enough and a good enough passer to pass to the cutter, get the ball over the defender. So, you know, he's going to be good. I can't imagine, and I hate to even bring up the topic, you know, I can't imagine him being a one and done right now, because he's not getting the minutes unless something happens late in the year where he just comes on and destroys things.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine him wanting to transfer and having to sit out a year. So
I'm
pretty certain, my gut tells me that Jordan Brown's going to be back next year.
I'd say so. I'd say that's a pretty good chance, you know, unless UCLA comes calling. But
you still have to sit out of here. That's the one thing.
Yeah, but I just mean, no, I know. That's the thing is, you're not going to prolong it by 3 years.
That's my point. That's my exact point. He could be a two and done, John.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be a one and done.
Two makes sense.
Two makes sense, but he doesn't want to stick around and be a three and done.
Well, if he sticks around next year, he's going to be pretty vital focal point of it, you know,
big chess piece
with Lindsey coming back and Jazz Johnson coming back and the transfers coming in.
Jalen's coming. Yeah. Jalen's going to be here. We got the transfers coming
KJ
in.
KJ Himes.
Yeah.
We're still going to be.
We're going to be good
next year. Not like
it is going to be a different game. We might be smaller and faster next year and actually be more up tempo.
Well, Musselman's adaptability to
isn't that crazy?
It's
to his talent.
They're so different every year from what he inherited. It's he's a fantastic coach.
Absolutely. So, you know,
and if UCLA, not to bring that up, but if UCLA does come calling, then tip your hat. Go to UCLA.
Yeah. We can't be upset, can we?
You can't be upset if the most storied program in the history of the sport comes calling for you.
I read some articles about that, and UCLA's philosophy is they're not really big on the transfer philosophy.
Well, they don't have to be.
Well, right. But
it's UCLA.
I know, but there's something to be said about kids that have 30, 40, 40, 50 games college experience and teaching them versus a raw high school talent.
If you look at it as you're going to get a one and done either way, I'd rather have the one and done that's 23 years old.
So would I. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, you probably don't have the ceiling talent-wise, but I'm pretty sure every coach in America would take a starting five of fifth-year seniors with this amount of talent every time.
They could. Yeah. They just weren't smart enough to do it.
Yeah.
Well, Ken, I think the UCLA situation is interesting because you mentioned, you know, just it raises your eyebrows where they get rid of Steve Alford. I think by and large, he was like the golden, you know, prodigy a few years ago. Never had a couple of decent teams, made the tournament, never quite, you know, went as far as they had hoped, like restore the, you know, Final Four level type days. But to fire him now, it's kind of funny, in season, you would think there has to be motivation behind that, right? If you're going to do it that quickly, it means you pretty much want to be first on the block, you know, in the carousel to get his replacement. So it makes you really wonder, and Eric Musselman's the obvious candidate to be recruited.
I don't think he's going there.
You know what's funny, John? I was going to say, I've actually read multiple articles, and I got a buddy of mine from Sportsline, who Mike Tierney, he works for the LA Times. He goes to, like, all the games, and he's even told me, because he's like, hey, what do you think, and we're having a conversation about. He told me he's very well-versed with people close to the program. He says, you know what, about the stories I've seen and whatnot, he goes, it's no joke. They have next to zero interest in Musselman.
Yeah.
I said, I find that hard to believe, but he said the same thing. One, they don't like his antics or the shirtless stuff or whatever.
Yep.
They said they don't like his antics, and he said the same thing about the recruiting of the transfers and stuff. And I told him, Mike, I said, you realize that's out of necessity. The reason you do everything with transfers is that how you get Nevada from 9 wins to the Sweet 16 in 2 years. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
I said he wouldn't do that at a place with resources. But as you just alluded to, at the same time, what's the difference? All these major programs, by and large, are one-and-done factories anyway. Mm-hmm. So let's imagine if it's a JC transfer or somebody who had a fallen out at another institution, or you know, someone who's just bound for the pros after a year or two anyway. So it struck me as odd, though, because you would think, I mean, who else do they have in mind? They're talking about Fred Hoiberg.
I read today that the boosters are going after Patino.
Which actually might not be the worst hire, but the bottom line is, like I said, they don't get rid of
according to Lepetard, he's 861 years
Patino's
old.
In his late 60s, I believe.
Well, that's not too bad, then.
But, yeah, if you're UCLA, though, the only reason you fire offered that early is to get that much of a jump on the next guy. It would surprise me. So regardless of all that, so even if you rule out UCLA, let's face it. I mean, when the carousel hits, I mean, when other openings happen, he's still going to be a real coveted commodity.
Remember, Pack fans, he's going to get offers. There's no doubt going to get offers. But it just goes back to you know, what he wants to do and what he wants to build and where he's at in his life. Who knows, you know? I mean, I know people that know his wife, and, you know, and I talked to them, and she says they absolutely love the area. And, I mean, if they stay here, it wouldn't shock me at all, you know? So, with that being said, you know, and it goes back to Josh. I posted the article you're talking about where they actually had Musselman as a long shot, a dark horse.
Right.
Yeah.
And I posted it on our Facebook page. So, if you want to read the article that Josh is talking about, Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping on Facebook, Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping, and it's posted on there along with a bunch of other stuff. You know, an article about the transfer and stuff like that. So, we have to go head off for our first commercial break. So, John, you're gonna throw your hat in the ring tomorrow, saying 14 is too many.
I believe 14 is too many, yeah.
So you like the Pack victory but not to cover?
Yeah, I know that's a easy way out. It's a bailout move. That's my shtick.
I'm with you, John. I'm a little bit nervous.
But
I'm
14, man.
I'm a little bit nervous about this game because we all know that
we're going to get their best shot.
New Mexico, exactly. We're going to get everybody's best shot. You're right, John. But New Mexico's good enough that AF shots, and we start slow. It could create a little difficulty.
Yeah, they've been a disappointment. They struggled, but that is a very talented team.
Josh, real quick.
Well, yeah, and 14. You realize, too, that's one of those that's so – leave so much room for error if you're the losing team. Like, let's put it this way. Nevada could dominate the game wire to wire, give up a few buckets in the last couple minutes and win by 12. Yeah. Yeah, they could be leading by 20 the whole way and not cover that. So that's too many points to pass up on. And I would take it tonight before you wake up and get 11 tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, Josh. I think the number's coming down. It has
for
all
sure.
The recent Nevada games. So, all right, let's head off to our first commercial break. This is the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with John the Hawk Stevens and Josh Nagel from Sportsline. You can get all Josh's articles. We're actually talking on the sports. We're gonna talk about this Alabama-Clemson game next. We're actually talking about our best bets. And I said what I liked the most in the Alabama-Clemson game. And Josh says, I already wrote an article about it. It's on Sportsline. It's my number one selection. So you can get all Josh's stuff at Sportsline. Sportsline.com.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah, I appreciate it. But it's one of those things, especially when it comes down to a final championship game like this, we do a prop bet special. And over the last couple of years, I've actually done really well in this specific game. So, yeah, there's a bit of a, whatever, successful history there. So they had me go through a prop menu and basically give the five that I like the most. And those are usually pretty solid. And, Ken, yeah, it just so happens we had the same one. And just tell the listeners, yeah, it's longest touchdown scored. I think there's going to be a ton of explosive plays. With the sports book I was using, that number was 52, which is really high. I usually see it in the mid-30s for a prop like that. Nonetheless, whether it's a pick six or punt return, I just think both teams with a great vertical passing game is the key, is what I put in there. They can both hit deep. Clemson did against Notre Dame. And Alabama can as well. I just feel like there's bound to be a big play that goes the distance. So I think the over for longest touchdown is a good one.
John, you want to weigh in on that?
No, it sounds absolutely perfect. And there's been special teams touchdowns and defensive touchdowns. Yeah.
Right, and that's another one I like, John, at plus $2 if there would be a defensive or special teams touchdown. Like, how could you not like that at plus $2?
Yeah.
Also, I took Tua's completions at over 21.5 because you know what? Another thing is funny as a research is he's only done that. He's only gone over that amount five times this year.
I'm pretty
sure. The reason is because he sits out the second half of every game. So whenever they played someone good, he went over
Did
that
you say
by
Tua?
Far. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Lawrence's reception totals are about the same.
Yeah, it was 21. And it was actually 21.5 for Tua, 22 for Lawrence. It was
higher. Right.
But I just think Tua gets over easily because, as I said, they play a good opponent and they'll throw, you know, all those quick screens, everything they do with the line of scrimmage. It's like that. The reason you're getting value there is because, you know, he didn't hit it half the time because he was sitting out the second half.
Yeah.
You know, let's look a little bit. Everybody knows that they played in the semifinals last year, Alabama and Clemson. Alabama was a 3.5-point favorite, the total of 47 in that game. And Alabama wins that game 24-6. They owe Clemson to 6 points. First down, 16-14, pretty even right there. Total yards for the game, 261 to 188. Last year they completed 16 and 18 passes, Josh, and I think the offenses are a little bit better or different
exactly.
this year.
You realize because and I do, Jalen Hurts and right. Kelly Bryant.
Right.
And, yeah.
And I do think you can throw the ball. I think, you know, what Oklahoma did against Alabama in the second half, I think that Clemson's going to try and take a page out of that book, so to speak. So I'm with you, Josh. I would bet both quarterback completions over, and I think one's going to get there for sure, and you're probably going to be free rolling for the other.
I totally agree. Like, I think you can't go wrong hammering both of those thinking – like you said, you're pretty much free rolling to a push, or like a push seems almost guaranteed. Both guys going over, not at all a surprise. I think they didn't even – Clemson has Etienne. Like, they didn't even throw it all that much against Notre Dame, and I think Lawrence still at 25, right? They got 25 completions. So, but, yeah, especially with the deep threats that both teams possess, I mean, you're going to see – I think, like you mentioned, this is going to be similar to the rematch of 2 years ago when it was more offensive thing game where you had Deshaun Watson and those cast of players for both teams. I think we're going to revert back to that. For some reason, the total, it opened up at 60, and it's down to 58.5. And I say, though, you know, between two great defenses, you would think maybe, you know, it goes under. But these are –
These teams
score 90 points a game combined. They both average 45 points a game.
I have that right here. Like you said, both teams are 14-0, as everybody knows. Clemson's averaging 44.3 points a game, and Bama's averaging 47.7.
Yes, and those are both top five numbers in the country. So I'm just telling you right there. It says, okay, if they're scoring 90, how much can they prevent the other team? I just think it's a clear on the over for sure. I think it's another one where both teams probably clip 30 for sure.
You know, John, you come from a defensive – you follow the Pittsburgh's division a lot, you know, and I think it's always been kind of a defensive oriented division. These defenses are giving up practically nothing. 12.9 points a game, points allowed by Clemson, and Alabama 16.2. So what's going to give, John? Defense is going to step up, or the offense is going to step up?
I think I'm with Josh here. I think it's the offense. It's just from what we've seen out of these teams over this era of Clemson and Alabama and everybody else. I don't see one of these LSU-Alabama type games where it's just someone just shuts down the other one.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it's possible.
Here's one thing, too, because they are so far ahead above it. We know, you know, the have and have nots of college football. Clemson and Alabama even seem a step ahead of all the other good contenders. But when you look at what's actually happened, they shut down these teams. I mean, the ACC was weak this year, and no offense to like Clemson, but it's easy, you know, it game in and game out, you're shutting down, you know, the likes of Wake or, you know, Pitt or whoever. And same thing with Alabama, by and large. They had a relatively easy schedule by SEC standards, and they played some pretty challenging teams. When you just look at it, some teams that had, you know, a little muscle on the offensive side, for instance, Clemson gave up 35 to South Carolina, 600 yards and 500 yards passing. South Carolina is a good but not great, you know, SEC team. And it's a rival thing, so they wanted to play well. Same thing with, you know, Oklahoma. As we know, they're a machine. They're great on the offensive end. You wonder, could they get much against Alabama? Well, relatively speaking, yeah, 35 is a lot. Just so happens that, you know, most of it came after they were down 28-0, but they got a lot of points. And so when you look at the firepower both teams also have, I just think it is one of those things where they'll be able to get their mileage against each other for sure.
Yeah,
I'm excited for Nick to come out with his prop sheet. You know, by the time they come Monday morning, Nick's going to have the Bible, like he does in the Super Bowl, you know, with he'll have alternate point spreads, alternate totals, first person to score, like you said, Josh, total passing completions by each quarterback, you know, interceptions, longest touchdown, who scored the first touchdown. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's always fun, Ken. Like you mentioned, Super Bowl kind of set the standard for the props, and then they call it on people realizing how much, when there's only one game, most customers enjoy a variety of betting options. And when it comes to this, yeah, I'll have a handful of props would be pretty sweet.
You know, John, there's 2 days in sports betting that I really look forward to. Two of the most exciting days. Phil Still coming out because it's the start of college football season. And getting the Bible for the Super Bowl, you know, when you walk and you get the staple pack of
that's the best. That's my favorite part of the app is not having to have 600 tickets in front of you.
Well, that's true, but you go through them and handicap them on the paper, then go back and bet them on the app.
No, exactly.
And then it's like a slot machine at the end of the game, and as they grade, you're just watching.
Yeah, exactly.
You really don't know what you win. You just say, where does it end?
Yeah. That's cool when you're just looking at your account and the money plunges in right there. Like it just, there you just count bolstered by – whatever, 92
so Josh,
bucks.
As we mentioned a little bit earlier, you posted some of your selections on Sportsline. What else did you post on there? I know your number one play, and we agreed on this, is the longest touchdown over, depending what the yardage is.
I just said a couple of them, right. So I like the over on both quarterback completions, over on longest touchdown score. One thing I also like, one individual player prop I had was Hunter Renfrow, over 41 receiving yards. I mean, we know what this guy's meant to the program, and he's like, now it's
over these last 21 years.
Right, it's kind of a joke that he's like the program mascot, like Perry Ellis of Kansas basketball. College athletes that seem to be around forever. Here's what's funny about Renfrow. He really hasn't. He's just played since his freshman year, and he's been a starter all 4 years, so it feels like 10 or 15. But a couple years ago, remember, he was Deshaun Watson. But he caught the pass, a little 2 yard out from Deshaun Watson, took the hit and held onto the ball for the winning touchdown. He had a
pick play.
He had 92 yards in that game. But, Ken, I look through it because he's a good, solid receiver. But he comes up in big games. Every big game, he
make a hell of a Patriot.
Has a good probably. But even just last week when they didn't need to throw it much against Notre Dame, he had 65 yards receiving. So 41, I just feel, as much offense as I think we'll see, he's their second-best receiver behind the guy who had all the long touchdowns, the freshman. But it just stands to reason. He's the reliable hands guy. He's going to get over 40 yards, I think.
Last year, Renfrow, five receptions, 31 yards.
Yeah, and that was when they couldn't do a lick, anything on offense.
And, John, you're talking about Renfrow being a good Patriot. Steelers might need a wide receiver, too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Not ideal situation.
You guys might need a running back, too. You might need a quarterback, too.
God, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable how the wheels have come off.
How you can just have those triplets, and then –
Ben,
two of them are more
Bell and Brown, and all of a sudden Ben runs his mouth and everybody.
Let Juju be the man. He can handle it.
He can handle it. I agree with that. So with that being said, how's the game going to play out, guys? I know that I'm going to have a lot of props on this game. Like you said, Josh, the number right now it's hovering right around Alabama -5.5, total 58.5. I think the total is light, Josh. I really do. I would only have the over in this game, and I think that if you forced me to make a bet right now. Alabama -5, Clemson +5 or 5.5, 5.5, or over or under 58.5. I'm going to take the over in this game. I think one team's going to get about 35 points in this game.
I agree, Ken. I think it's going to be an up-tempo thing where we're seeing lots of big plays. And we know they're both capable. Hey, ATN will probably be a Heisman finalist next year, but he's explosive. Had a 75-yard touchdown against Notre Dame. He started the game against Pitt, the ACC championship, with an 80-yard touchdown run. He's explosive. He's a next-level guy. But he's not the only one. As we saw a couple years ago, explosive guys at both teams that could just go the distance, maybe have a defensive score as well. I do think it's going to be fast tempo. And I lean toward Alabama a little bit, but quite a little sentiment on the underdog. You realize the first two, this is the third time they face in the 5 years of the playoffs. Clemson's covered them both. A lot of people like them. I would lean toward. I just think Alabama does have
Clemson didn't cover
that
last
much
year.
Of an edge. No, but that was a semifinal.
Oh,
we're talking
finals.
Championship.
You said championship. Okay.
Championship. And nonetheless, I just think Alabama's just as far ahead of them this year. Although Clemson's awfully good. But like you said, why even bother? Of course, I'll have that in a teaser, whatever I do. But I do believe the over is the key play for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you with the over. I just as good as the defenses are, the offenses are just that much better. I believe, and I would love to take Clemson. I would follow Clemson. I'd root for Clemson. I just can't do it.
Going back to the total, guys, let's talk a little bit about the people that aren't going to be playing.
Yeah, I was going to get to that.
Go ahead, John.
I saw the headline. I didn't see exactly who it was.
Clemson's their number one defensive
The same guys who sat out. Dexter Lawrence.
Same ones.
Okay. Failed drug test.
But still, I mean, now you're talking about – that's the difference between – playing Oklahoma and Notre Dame, mm-hmm. who are small, to now you got that offensive line of Alabama beating you.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
Now you got the Clemson line beating you.
It's a big deal.
It's going to make a little bit bigger impact on the
Clemson
total.
Grows defensive linemen, and they're as deep as anybody in the world. But this is Alabama you're dealing with now, just like you said. And we've mentioned Notre Dame a couple times. Can we keep Notre Dame as far away from this playoff as possible?
Boy, did they even show
Although them? It is fun to watch them get their ass kicked.
Oh, my gosh. They did not even compete in that game. Absolutely did not
You're
compete.
Never going to compete with Clemson and Alabama. Absolutely. Oklahoma did fine after the 28-0.
Yeah.
But Notre Dame is just – give me Michigan State.
Yeah, I agree.
There's no way – I'll tell you right now, Ohio State was the only team that I could see beating Alabama or Clemson.
What about Georgia? A motivated
Georgia could,
team?
Yeah.
I know they didn't show up. They didn't show up for their bowl game at all.
And that's
Texas
irrelevant.
Beat them down.
But. When people say you have no argument now because Georgia happened, that's irrelevant. I think the three best teams are in the SEC, and then you have Ohio State in my mind.
And I think the one team that I can finally just stop listening to
UCF.
Yes.
Yes.
Did you? I didn't.
Well, I mean, that's also not fair without having their starting
Josh,
quarterback.
Okay. LSU was missing 9 defensive starters.
Is that all?
Yes. Listen to this audience. Everybody's talking about, you know, the quarterback for Central Florida not being 14-3. They pick the ball back. Or they pick the ball off. They go up 14-3. Now they're playing against this. They got this. They have this explosive offense. 11-point lead. The defense of LSU missing 8 or 9 starters. Might even have been 10. And they just absolutely.
Wouldn't you like to see the extended playoff and them have a shot? So, what did they end up as, Ray?
I think they ended up 8th.
So, if they went 8th, so they play Alabama.
Would have been
I also
Alabama.
Read
so, we can just end this thing early.
I also read that they didn't really take that game serious, so they're still the self-proclaimed.
Oh, they're still,
they're still the national champions.
Yeah. But so. The argument for 8, I think, makes sense, though, because, John, to your point, and those who really defend the top 4, that doesn't make any sense to me because, put it this way, Oklahoma, simply resume-wise, all those teams vying for the 4th spot. They made the most logical sense. Say, okay, their one loss was by 3 points to a rival. They then avenged that, so they get in. That's fine. But like you said, splitting hairs in terms of current form and everything else. Ohio State almost had the exact same resume right there, a conference one loss conference champion. It's like, all right, so their loss was worse per se to Purdue. Like, okay, you could also argue Oklahoma got taken to the wire. They almost lost to Army at home, and they almost lost to Oklahoma State, which outplayed them. But it's just splitting hairs how close they were. Georgia, same thing. It's like, well, two losses to great teams. Should have beat Alabama, and they lost.
Well, LSU and Alabama.
Right. So, and clearly the eye test shows that they belong.
How good is LSU?
I mean, it's just a way to snuff out that argument. Instead of making it such a fine line between 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th, and they're all right there. Let them all in along with the 8th. And like I said, there's always a huge drop off.
Let's talk real quick. We got about a minute and a half, maybe not even that long. But here's my argument that, Josh, my absolute argument, and when they went to the playoff system, it was my same argument. Everybody was upset because they said, oh my gosh, the 3 team's not going to get in. The 3 teams should be the 2 team, and they should play. So they said, we'll make it 4 teams. And I said this back then. If you make it 4, now you got complaining about the 5th team. If you make it 8, now you got complaining about the 9th team.
I don't think so. I think once you get to 8,
exactly.
That's pretty much
that's
over.
The counter-argument to that, Ken, is every year so far, and I've looked at it every time, there's a huge drop-off. The 9th could have no complaint at all because there's basically whoever's 9th has 3 losses.
I was just
going to
say,
no argument.
That's Florida.
Yeah, every year, Ken, there's a clear cut-off where pretty much 8 through 4 could be argued, and yet – there's a huge drop-off from that point on. So the whole thing about, 8 wouldn't be enough, 9 and 10.
What do you think about 6?
I think 8 would actually be perfect. I think 8 would be the way to go.
With Alabama and Clemson.
It's like a first-round bye.
Yeah. With the 1-2 bye.
I think 8 would be the way to go still. It's just 2 extra games.
I say 24.
There's nothing wrong, John, with what you're saying. Take the 1-2, and then you have the play-in games.
It's inevitably going to be Alabama and Clemson, and they have the play-in games. Yeah, and let them.
All right. That being said, real quick, Josh. Your best bets for the Alabama Clemson game?
Like I said, I'm going to stick with the over if I had to. I think Alabama's going to win. I like the over better.
All right, and make sure you read Josh's props on Sportsline. John?
I'm leaning Clemson.
Clemson a little bit? Plus 5.5?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll probably have a Clemson and an over teaser.
I'm probably going to end up with I'm going to end up with the game over and the longest TD over too. And once we get all the prop bets, we'll be posting those on our Facebook page of the things that we like too at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. All right, that's it off for a nice commercial break. This is the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, we're back. One parting shot real quick on this Alabama-Clemson game. Don't forget the reason this number's moved down a little bit is because they're anticipating weather. Weather and for the game. That's kind of, I want to throw that out there. So make sure that you
before you really chunk in a large amount of money, make sure that it's not a torrential downpour.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either, but it's different. Yeah. Like, it's in Santa Clara instead of, you know, one of the domes.
How tough's the weather going to be in Santa Clara?
Domes or whatever, and I guess, yeah, rain's about the only thing
you could weather.
Worry about.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into the wild card games this weekend. First game, Texans at home versus the Colts. Nick, you 1.5. Texans -1.5 on the card, and he's a total of 48.5. Right now, it's setting at 1, so a little bit of money's coming. It came in on the dog. 48.5. You know, I look at this game. I don't see the move on the total. Everybody's talking about this game going over and this total. You know, Houston's 11-5 this year. Excuse me, Indianapolis 10-6. They played twice this year. 24-21 was game one. That was at Houston. And game two was a little bit more high scoring, a lot more high scoring at 37-34. I just look at this game, and I don't see the move. What I do like in this game is sacks over. I mean, I did on my research, game one, they had 7 sacks. Game two, they had 11 sacks. So hopefully you can hopefully Nick will throw out a sack. Josh is already looking for it. Sack total, 7-11 in the two games. John?
I like the Colts here. Just the way that these teams ended their seasons. Colts are on fire, man. Yeah. They're playing really well. Andrew Luck's looking like Andrew Luck. And, yeah, they're playing pretty good defense. Not, you know, it's not, the Texans play better defense, obviously. But I understand the move on the side. It's Colts or nothing for me.
All right, I'm going to give it to you right here, guys. Like I said, they played twice this year, and I'm going to bet this as soon as I get up. I need my light so I can look at this because I can't believe what I'm actually witnessing right now. They played twice this year. The sack total is 5, guys. 7-11 in the two games they played this year. 7-11. Man.
Yeah.
Josh, give me – I have aces. I'm going to stick my money in the pot, Josh.
I take Texans sacks over 5.
Yeah,
it's a good one. Ken, and you mentioned, I think the game's too close to call. Like, remember the first game of the year, that was how the Texans went to overtime. Remember the Colts went for it on that fourth down in overtime. It was a crazy game, and Houston came back and kicked a field goal a couple plays later, or else it would have ended in a tie. That was in, like, the last 30 seconds. But that allowed Houston to start their year with 3 straight losses, and that ended the skid for them. And they've been fine ever since. And then, you know, the Colts came around after a rough start, and they're on fire as the season ends. The side, I mean, beats me, Ken. I think it's tough. I think you do have to factor in home field edge. I think Houston might be a little bit better overall. But like you said, why bother with that one if you could get an edge on one or many of these props? I mean, stands to reason. If there was that much of a pass rush in the first couple matchups, yeah, why not?
You know, John, with this total. Sorry, Josh. With the total heading the way it is, going north, John, and coming, you know, going over, you know, it's going to be a fast track in Houston. You don't have to worry about anything like that. But you have to figure that if they think this is going over, it's going to be because both teams are chunking the ball. It's not going to be a run game, so there's going to be great opportunities for sacks, guys. I mean, 7-11 sacks, 2 times they played this year. Both defenses, the Colts, end up the years on a yards per game basis, number 11th in the NFL, 339 yards. Texans were 12th at 343. I think the sacks gets there easy.
It probably does.
Listeners probably don't want to hear me talk about prop bets the way I do, but listen,
that's part of the deal.
You can't just
look at the side, the total. There's way more to it than this, and it's a division game. I think that I wouldn't say a feeling out period, but you don't show your hand too early, I think. I like a first half under or something like that is something to look at. And I like the Colts. I think the Colts win here easily.
You know, it goes back to what I've kind of thought about the Colts all year. You know, I read articles at the beginning of the year. We talked about them on some of our previous shows. Is that Andrew Luck? I read articles when he first came back. He was so rusty that he had trouble commanding the huddle on offense in live games. It's easy on, you know, when you're in practice and stuff, but getting into the game, you know, getting your timing down for the play clock, getting everybody in the right position, getting the plays called. He said that he was rusty with that. So it took him a few games to get back into the swing of things. In addition, he had not thrown a football for a year plus. So it also took him 16, 15, 14 weeks of continuous NFL
practicing and throwing the ball to get his arm strength back, and I think he's back now.
I mean, I agree, Ken. Like, early on, you weren't sure what to make of it. It looked like he might be a little tentative. It's a tough injury to come back from. But I know what you mean, because late in the season, I ended up seeing a few more Colts games. It was clear. His arm strength seemed like night and day. You're like, whoa, where'd this come from? But down the field, just throwing a tight rope, 40 yards to the sideline, and it's like, whoa, you could tell he's back. I mean, that's why he physically convinced me that he's returned to form. And, with that, it's kind of funny because it kind of sneaks up on you, because for a while it just seemed like he was going to be injured forever, and the Colts were also terrible on defense. It just seemed like they were just an afterthought. But they got the new coach, right, Frank Reich, and luck, apparently he's returned to health, and they figured it out on the defensive side. Suddenly you look up and they're back to a 10-win team again.
Luck's been sacked 18 times all year. Watson, how many times do you think Deshaun Watson?
26.
62. You were inverted.
Yes, I'm dyslexic.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right. He has sort of a bit of the Russell Wilson syndrome, where that leads the league in yardage every year. Wilson does for quarterback rushing yards, but he also gets sacked the most because he runs around so much. It just happens.
Exactly.
You get caught behind the line, it counts as a sack. It's going to happen a lot when you run as much as he does.
Wow. So I'm with you guys. I think it's, if I can get points in this game, it's, unfortunately it's down to one. I wish I could have got more points. I should have weighed in a little bit earlier because I do like the Colts. Nick used 1.5 on the half point card. So I'll be, I like dog and under in this game. I really do. I like dog and under in this game. Maybe if things, I don't think the game's going to get explosive until it gets out of hand, if that makes sense.
It does. It totally does. I like it slow early and then picking up the pace as the game goes on.
No, and that's the first game tomorrow, and the kickoff of that game is at 1:35. Then we have the 5 o'clock game with the Cowboys, and then the Wolfpack plays at 5 p.m. too, so a lot of late action too. So, and I look at this game, the Colts, number 7th ranked offense in the NFL, 386 yards a game. They're averaging 107 yards rushing. The Texans are averaging 126 yards offensively too. So, even with that, John, and we said we think it's going to stay close. That's the reason I like the under. I just think the game's going to play. They're going to try and run the ball. I mean, they're absolutely going to try and run the ball. The Colts are giving up 101 yards defensively on the ground. So, everybody knows the Texans, the way they want to win games, their philosophy, you guys guarantee you agree with this. They want to play defense, be able to run the ball, and then beat you deep over the top.
I just think that's a pretty common philosophy.
Did you? Well, not for all teams. Chiefs isn't it?
If they had their druthers.
No, it's not. You really want Mahomes not chucking the ball all the way around the yard?
He's overrated.
Or Big Ben? What a bad beat I took in that game. Golly, I took a bad beat in that yardage game.
What did that end up at?
I had a 100-yard lead in the third. We're talking about, listeners, we're talking about, everybody knows, I had a $100 bet at 40-1 for Patrick Mahomes to lead the NFL in passing yards. Mahomes was there all year. Third quarter of the Sunday games, Mahomes was up 100 yards in the third quarter. Pittsburgh goes down and score. It goes up, I believe, 13-10 or 16-13.
Yeah, 13-10.
13. They go up 13-10. They kick the ball back off to Cincinnati. I'm leading. And then Joe Mixon breaks one off for 80 yards. They allow him to kick the field goal to tie the game. Big Ben gets the ball, and he goes down and gets like 45 yards on the last drive because they couldn't stop the big run, and I end up losing the dough.
But how much did you lose by it?
25 yards, maybe.
Oh, goodness.
Something really small, John. And like I said, and they pulled Patrick Mahomes in the fourth quarter of the Kansas City game.
Yeah, that was the concern.
And that was the one concern. So the Raiders, they moved the ball early. I thought the Raiders were going to, if they would have just stayed in the game and stayed competitive, I'd have been okay. So with that being said, brutal, brutal beat. Bad taste in my mouth. $100 at 40-1, and you're in it until – 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter of the other team.
Yeah.
I kept rooting for Ben to just. I thought the last drive, John, they'd run the ball and kill the clock, but got to throw
it's not
the
their
ball.
Style anymore.
It's not. So maybe that's the problem with that team, anyways.
Yeah.
And Tomlin. So, but just, let's get back to the Colts game. So, Texans 11-6. Both defenses 11-12. Offenses ranked seventh and 15th. Colts are averaging 27 points a game. Texans 25 points a game. Defensively, the Colts are giving up 21 points a game. Texans giving up 19 points a game. I like dog and under in this game, and I do one of my better plays, which I will be posting on our Facebook page at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping, will be sacks over 5 in this game.
Ken, one other prop that just stands out looking at the sheet here is you know, the tight end Eric Ebron, his receptions over under his four. I'd go over with that one. Then though, Andrew Luck, the guy who's always had the tight end as a safety net. Remember when he came out, they drafted Colby Fleener, his Stanford teammate, who for years was his top target. He's always been that guy, though, the intermediate, especially when the protection breaks down. That tends to be, you know, the hot routes, just, you know, basically tight end turn and square up, and he throws to him. Ebron's also been on fire lately. Toward the end of the season, he was having multiple, you know, 10-plus receptions per game. So that's a huge – I feel like that's a light number, too.
John, what do you think about longest TD in this game? You know, you 43.5. I mean, they're going to throw the ball up. They're going up top.
In pretty much every game, I like that over. It's just there's always going to be an attempt at it, and there's always the scoop and score, fumble, touchdown, or pick for six, and it's just I always like that over.
Marlon Mack rushing yards, guys. This is an interesting prop. Marlon Mack is 58.5 total rushing yards, and you have the Texans are giving up 82. Excuse me, that's not the one I wanted to look at. I apologize. I was wanting to look.
Come on, Kenny.
I was looking at, Lamar Miller over 56.5 rushing yards when the Colts are giving up 100 yards a game on the ground. That's half, Josh.
I know, that's hard to say, though. Like, could he be counted on at the same time, right? Because Lamar Miller's not exactly Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, he's not bad, but could you count on him to get 60 in a playoff game? Sometimes you realize, too, teams, I think, abandoned the run earlier in the playoffs more than they normally would. Bill O'Brien, I know, can get a little pass happy sometimes. I'm just not sure I like the over for either running back.
They're just such small totals.
They are. I'd take a shot at it. You're one run away from having a pretty good base.
Total passing yards, John, for Andrew Luck, 295.
Oh, man, that's a lot.
You know, it's crazy. Deshaun Watson passing and rushing yards is only 5 yards more, 500 or 300.
Do sacks count against your passing yardage total?
I don't think so.
It's rushing yard. Oh, in college, it's passing
yeah,
yardage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 295 is a lot. I wouldn't be surprised to get there, but that's a lot.
All right, what do you like in this game, John? Give me your final two picks.
I like the Colts. I think they're just the way both teams are playing right now. They're playing with a lot of confidence, better quarterback. I love Deshaun Watson, but he's not Andrew Luck. I like it, and I lean towards the under as well.
Real quick, Josh, got 5 seconds.
Now, just that prop, as in probably the under.
The under. All right. Yeah. I like sacks over. I like sacks over in this game. The prop sheet's out for all the NFL games. You can get those at William Hill or on your mobile sports app at www.williamhill.us. It's that time we have to head off to traffic. Be back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. Make sure you like our Facebook page at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. You can get all Josh Nagel's articles at sportsline.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at JoshNagel1. Is that right, Josh?
Correct. Thanks.
All right. Game two tomorrow, the late game, the 5:15 game, Dallas at home versus Seattle. The battle of the 10-6 teams. Dallas ends up winning their division. Seattle ends up coming in as a wild card. I have to admit, I'm surprised about both teams. I didn't think Dallas was a 10-win team this year. I thought their win total was 8, and I thought that would get there at least flat on the number, and they end up two games over. They kind of turned the page a little bit with the signing of Amari Cooper. But I'm surprised Seattle's 10-6 from the way they started the season. Yeah. Josh, these teams played earlier in the year at Seattle, and Seattle was a 1-point favorite with a total of 40. Seattle wins the game 24-13. This is a weird game to me. Dallas with the – if you would have told me Dallas would have a top-seven defense before the season started, I would have just said, well, we're probably going to win the Super Bowl because that was certainly the Achilles heel. But, you know, here we are, and all of a sudden the offense can't do anything. You know, seventh-ranked defense this year, 22nd-ranked offense, where it was basically reversed last year. Maybe – actually, it was worse on defense.
Yeah, you're right, Ken. There was a time when that was a huge liability. But in the Seahawks' case, yeah, pretty much all the projections were that they were essentially this close to a total rebuild. Their win total was 7.5. So this is going to be seen as a huge thing if they even broke even and won 8 games. And you looked at their schedule, and they had the Vikings at home, and the Chiefs at home. They had a brutal home schedule. The Seahawks just think, yeah, that 6-10 wasn't out of the question when you looked at what they had in front of them. Instead, it just shows that they evolved pretty nicely in terms of, yeah, that whole basically, you know, Legion of Boom defensive front, you know, the dynasty they had on that, and all moved on more or less with the exception of one or two players. And how they evolved from the offensive end too, though, Ken, it was just bizarre. You know, over the last few years now, they used to pay so much on the defensive side that they had no money for real weapons or Wilson or offensive line, which is why I got beat up a lot. It was like, you know, entire bankroll into these defensive stars. And they still don't have much, you know, surrounding. They just completely, you know, changed their game plan around. Even with guys, even though they drafted Rashard Penny and, whatever, Chris Carson is a seventh rounder. They don't have, let's say, dynamic running backs to speak of, but they just kind of went, tried to develop it. Mike Davis as well was pretty good, but developed a power run game with average running backs and ended up leading the league doing that, which took all the pressure off Wilson. Turns out the other defensive guys they plugged in are, you know, doing all right. So even though they sort of look different, they're still pretty effective.
Yeah, I think this is Pete Carroll's best coaching job by far. It's yeah.
That's worth noting. How much he had to adapt. That's crazy.
Yeah, I thought he'd be the type of guy that once the going got rough at his age, he would just skip out. But he's taking it on, and he's done a great job there. And these teams are really similar in their approach. And like Kenny said, it's surprising that they're both here as 10-win teams in this situation. And these teams being so similar, I'll take the team with the better quarterback, which is clearly Russell Wilson. And his ability to make plays on his own, really, without having an Ezekiel Elliott and an elite line in front of him. I trust Russell Wilson to do the right thing at the right times all the time, and this would be no different. So all things being equal, give me the team with the better quarterback.
It's interesting. I look at this line. Nick used one.
Russell Wilson, not to interrupt you, Russell Wilson should be what Dak aspires to be.
I agree with that.
I mean,
and
just
you hit the nail. Your comment hit the nail on the head, John. Is you expect Russell Wilson to do the things he's supposed to do in certain situations
yeah.
where you don't have that same trust
right.
in Dak Prescott?
Yeah.
And I'm a
yet.
Cowboy fan.
Yet.
And I'm a Cowboy fan. Don't get me wrong. I'm a Cowboy fan.
Yeah.
So I'm not just slamming Dak. I watch all his games, all the Cowboy games closely, and I kind of echo what you're saying, John. Nick used 1.5. Nick Bogdanovich, the lead trader for William Hill bookie, used 1.5 on the half point card. And the money's coming in on Dallas. We have a half-point move to Dallas -2 right now. He opened at 43.5, and the totals went down to 43 flat. So it looks like we have a little money coming awkwardly here, Josh and John, on the favorite and under.
Yeah, and I don't know what they opened at, though, but I also saw a lot of shops actually briefly opened 3 or 2.5, and then it went down.
Yeah, that's correct.
So it's pretty much under a field goal everywhere for the Cowboys now. But it's tough. I mean, they do match up pretty equally. And that was the thing that opened your eyes to me. That was Seattle's first big home win was against Dallas, but we didn't know at the time. I thought, okay, maybe they caught a mediocre Dallas team on a bad day. The Seahawks got one of the few wins they're going to get this year. But then you go back and check, and the past few times they've played, it's been a sort of a similar trajectory. Seattle's dominated the last few. Remember, a couple of years ago, they had to win to stay alive. In Dallas, they were about a 6-point underdog in Seattle, even getting like next to zero offense. They got a couple pick sixes from Prescott. The thing that would scare me, Ken, if I'm a Cowboys fan, is that's what they do, is they game plan Prescott extremely well. It's pretty clear on the defensive side. They kind of stack the line of scrimmage and say, okay, Elliott can get some, but we're going to – they basically want to force them into down and distance with Prescott having to make plays. And the last few times they've matched up, it hasn't looked good for Dak at all. Seattle's just had his number, so that's what scares me is how well they've defended him.
Yeah.
John, yeah.
Well, here
he's not the best color guy for anything.
I was waiting for you.
And earlier this year, Ken, I had looked up the numbers. I think Dak, though, he only had like 160 yards passing, 2 more interceptions. And earlier this year at Seattle, it was pretty bad too. So
Dak Prescott versus Seattle in the 24-13 victory in Seattle, he was 19 for 34 for 168, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. Russell Wilson, he only threw for 192, 16 for 28. It's one of those games. Zeke still had 16 rushes for 127 on the road in the Legion of Boom. And I think that's going to be the difference here, guys. I really think that, and believe me, I'm the first guy to bet against Dallas, first guy to bet against Oklahoma, first guy to bet against the Pack if I think it's the right call. I think Dallas wins this game. I really do. I think Zeke's going to be able to run the ball, and I think that the Dallas is going to be able to control the game to the extent where as long as they don't do anything really silly, i.e., Dak Prescott doing something silly. I think Dallas is going to be okay in this game. I think they're going to be able to run the ball against Seattle and control the tempo of the game. Seattle on defense still gives up 113 yards a game. I mean, and so that plays right into exactly the game plan that Dallas wants to have. Looking at Ezekiel Elliott, his rush yards for this game are 94.5. If there was one prop here that I kind of look at for Dallas, Amari Cooper, 72.5 yards.
Yeah.
I tend to bet that under.
72.5.
It's so tough, John.
That's exactly it. And especially, he's had a couple of these games where he wasn't doing much early and then came late and really, really showed up. So those are tough. Receivers, those props are always the hardest for me is the receiver's yards. Just like you said, that's one play.
Yeah. unless you have an absolute lockdown corner that is good enough to take a receiver out of the game.
Yeah, they don't.
So, well, yeah, they traded them all away.
Yeah.
So, with this game, I actually like Dallas in this game. I think Dallas at the minus two, at the minus 1.5 on the half point card is probably going to get my money. You know, it's just one of those games where I think Dallas is going to rise up. I mean, they're just due. You know, I think Dallas overachieved this
year. They're definitely due.
Yeah, they're definitely due. And I just think going down there, I think Dallas is going to be able to get this game done. I really, really do. I think they're going to be able to run the ball, control the clock.
Well, it makes sense. And, Ken, I think that's why as many of the other games are basically pick 'em. It's so airtight. Like, I had to discover this one for Sportsline because they have the best spread record and both teams combined. So I have to make some sort of pick first to promote. I took the Seahawks for no other reason. Well, one, the history mentioned, and just because there was a couple points available. But it's, you know what I mean?
I see your
point.
It's
so airtight, though. I'd have probably taken points if Dallas was a 3-point dog. It's just, it was all I could do. But I'm far from super confident in it.
When the Cowboys lose another one by probably 25 or so, who's going to be the next head coach, you think?
Troy Aikman? I don't know.
Tony Romo?
No, Lincoln Riley.
That's probably a good call. Or his predecessor.
Yeah. So Bob Stoops?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised Stoops didn't even get a call. You know, they already announced the head coach for Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
I really thought Bob was going to get at least an interview.
I thought
there.
So too. But
it was the kid who filled in for Urban Meyer, yeah. Ryan Day. It always strikes me so odd about that, Ken. It's like, okay, they talked about what a great job he did, and that may have been the case. But it's real easy to fill in for your boss for a couple of weeks when you know he's coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's a dangerous thing because not only did they have
– against TCU. And
right. I mean, that was the biggest one. A couple cupcakes, and then TCU was the biggest game where he was at the helm as the interim. But then when you realize, though, when you have Greg Schiano, like, and a bunch of other real accomplished assistants on your staff – I just put it this way. It surprised me that they just handed it to Ryan Day. And the reasoning was, well, he did so great when Urban was out. I'm like, oh, man, maybe.
You know where Urban's going to resurface, don't you?
Florida?
Notre Dame. Notre Dame. Yeah.
Except it's going to be hard. They're going to have to be pretty bad for Brian Kelly to lose his job.
Well, keep doing what you're doing. Keep
getting to the promised land.
Beating Stanford and Navy and then go meet your maker.
The only head-to-head.
It'll get old.
The only head-to-head stats I have in this game is the last six meetings in Dallas have been under 5-1. So the five games going under one, and it plays right into what Dallas wants to do. I can see this game going under, you know, I can see the same game going under 43 easy.
Oh, I definitely could. So I expect it to.
So I like the under in this
17-9 Seahawks.
Yeah, something like that. It very well could be. I like the 9 points. That's weird. But with that being said, you know, with the 9. So Josh, parting shots, Seahawks, right?
Yeah, like I said, it's tough. I think the total is tough to what? It could also be 24-21. I want no piece of the total. Slight lean towards Seattle.
All right. San Diego and San – excuse me, I can't do it. The Chargers and the Ravens. That's all I'm going to say right here. I just can't get it.
Who are you going with here?
Wouldn't Nick use – he used – what did he use? This is a Sunday game. He used the Ravens 2.5 with a total of 41.5. Already a move up to 3 and the total coming at 42. These teams played earlier in the year.
The Chargers blew it.
Yeah, Baltimore wins 22-10. Looks like Baltimore scored 16. What they scored? They outscored them 16-7 in the second half. At halftime, it was 6-3. Wow, man, look at this game.
Again, that outcome. Remember, I think that was on a Thursday night game, and that was one of those, or Saturday night around Thanksgiving.
Saturday night,
right? Because that was the first weekend they had Saturday night games. Because that outcome, though, is probably the reason now the Chargers are traveling. Instead of, if they win that one, they probably end up winning the division and the seeds are flipped or whatever. It's that loss is why they're on the road at the first week of
the
wild card playoffs, right? So it's interesting, though, Ken, because from what I can tell, the Chargers seem like the super popular underdog this weekend. And who knows with so many that might cover. But it's just tough. I mean, again, this is one I think so difficult to pinpoint because – you would think. I mean, Lamar Jackson's done way better than I would have expected, and it's weird how they're doing the read option stuff, and it's confusing everybody. But there's also the history that John Harbaugh's never lost a first-round playoff game, and every time he's been with the Ravens, he's 6-0 in the first weekend. And I wonder, you know, the Chargers look so great, but they typically have faltered in the postseason. The point being is, like, I'm stuck. Like, I can't even – I said maybe take the points just because there's three of them available, and that's why I think they're going to loom. The points are going to loom big.
Yes.
Ravens are an absolute fraud. They have no business being here.
I agree with that 100%, John. I really do. I do.
Give me the Los Angeles Superchargers. My man, Philip Rivers.
12-4, John. They have the number ranked 11th ranked offense, number 9th ranked defense. I'm still not convinced that Lamar.
Phillip Rivers is not losing to Lamar Jackson.
That's my. I agree with that 100% too, John. I just don't.
He already has once.
That was when we were younger. That was last year, dude.
Josh, he's right. Well, yeah, being said, the Chargers defense, number 9th ranked defense in the NFL. I know the Ravens have the number 1 ranked defense, but I like the Chargers. Josh, like you said, they're handing me 3 points against. With a team that's 12-4,
yeah,
give it to me, take it.
They're fraud. They're
John. This is your division. This is your home
no,
turf.
No, exactly. And it's not just bitter guy coming out a little bit, but I just the Ravens are not on the same caliber. I know they just beat them, Josh. They're not on the same level as the Chargers. If the Chargers play their A game, they'll win this game by 25.
Let's look at the stats real quick in the first meeting. First downs 15-14. Where's total?
Talking to you, Huggins.
Yeah, rush yards, Ravens 159-51, passing yards 202-147. So it looks like how many sacks did these teams have? I love looking at sacks. They had 7 sacks, 3 and 4. So with that being said, I'm with you. I just in this game, playoff, low total 42. Give me the 3 points, Josh. It's -1. Give me 3 and -120. I'll take that every day of the week. Why not sprinkle in some +125, John?
Why not? Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I'm in. My Steeler fan buddies are Brent Husted. We got to do this for America, the Chargers. Get the Ravens the hell out of here. Nobody wants to look at John Harbaugh, Justin Tucker kicking field goals. Get out of here. You're the Ravens. Nobody likes you.
You're disgusted.
Yeah, and congratulations. The Browns are going to win the next 7
AFC
North titles anyway.
Oh, man. I mean, and let's go back to that.
They almost won that game, man.
You're right. The Browns or the Ravens had to win last week to get in.
Yeah.
The Browns gave them all they had.
They really did.
The Chargers are better than the Browns.
Chargers are better than the Browns.
Give me the 3 points in the underdog
in
this game.
It's been nice for Steeler fans. That's going about to be dead.
We're
about to be the Bengals.
Let's head off for our last commercial break. This is the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the last segment of the William Hill Sports Show. Make sure you do all your sports wagering with William Hill. www.williamhill.us. John's not even mic'd up yet. John, what are you doing? Are you answering your fans' Twitters?
I'm answering my fans' text messages.
What are they saying?
It's mostly Steeler fans, so it's not positive and not stuff I can really say on the air.
Okay, you guys just haven't got over yet. So next game, Josh, why don't you lead into the next game? Let's talk a little about the Eagles and Bears. Are we done with the Chargers, Ravens?
I believe so. And, yeah, Ken, so this is the kind of Sunday.
Hold on. The head-to-head stat that I came up with on the break, I was looking up some stuff. The Ravens are 7-0 against the spread their last 7 playoff games, and the unders 5-0 their last 5 playoff games. So if you're looking for stats or something like that, 7-0 versus the spread last 7 playoff games.
And that totals 42, and I actually would like that under quite a bit because they went under the first meeting with room to spare, and that seems like the formula they're going to have.
F the Ravens. That's my
but
stat.
Late game on Sunday, Ken. So the last one of the 4 of this weekend, Bears and Eagles. We know the Eagles kind of somehow maneuvered their way in. They needed help. They needed
you can see
win.
It coming for a couple
they
weeks.
They needed the Bears to win. It's still funny, though, because they one of those things they didn't control their own destiny, but at least they did their half of it, which beating the Redskins, and then they got Minnesota to lose again to the Bears. They get in hanging on by a thread, Super Bowl champions, and the Bears are the breakout team of this whole year, laying 6.5 at home with a total of 41.5. It's interesting because this is one where I think it's actually grown from 6 to 6.5. Of course, I think a 7, I would take the Eagles in a heartbeat. But it's one of those rare instances, though, where the public sort of likes the underdog, where they, you know,
boy,
more trust in the Eagles or whatnot.
This is the one game, Josh, where the two teams haven't played this year. Nick used a 5.5 on the half point card, and it's a full point move to the favorite up to 6.5.
And it's kind of funny, Ken, how the Eagles are only there because of the Bears, and now they got to go play them. Meaning, you know, it's a dangerous thing where Chicago basically let them in. And I just think given what they did, though, sort of a wounded animal and all that, I think the Eagles are still dangerous to face. Like, they've looked better with a healthy Nick Foles versus, say, I thought Carson Wentz looked awful most of the time he was in there. He's clearly still playing injured. I mean, they do their thing, again, with the quick sets and their screen passes and everything. The Eagles' defense has been a mess. That's their thing. The secondary is terrible, but the Bears, you know, they throw some, but it's not like they're going to usually throw 400 yards on you. I think it's tough. I still think I would take the points where it's one of those, especially if I could buy a half, which I'm sure at that number I could buy a half up to 7. I would take the points.
What's the fog forecast here?
I'm not sure I'm not sure what the overall weather is looking like.
That fog may have cost the Eagles the World Championship that year. That Eagles team was amazing. But anyway, I think the Eagles have a sense of accomplishment for coming back and making the playoffs here. And I think the Bears are
hungry.
Yeah, they're very hungry. They're very good.
You know what I can't get out of my mind, John, is what the Bears did to the Rams in Chicago when the Rams were clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, that's right.
All cylinders.
That's right. So this is going to be their – well, then I guess they can play another home game there.
But do you worry about the Bears being their debut on the big stage?
Not really. Just because of the style of team that they are. They're a defense run-the-ball team. And I think that's going to play in any scenario, and I don't think that you're going to have to lean too much on Trubisky to win this thing for you. I like the Bears here, especially on a teaser. I'm going to have them on a teaser, but just with the points laying under a touchdown, you have to start thinking about the Eagles, like you said, when it gets up to seven, if it gets up to seven. But I just think the Eagles with that late season run. How about they keep Foles and trade Wentz? You get more for Wentz, right?
You would think. Well, obviously, there'd be a ton of takers for him, John. And here's what's funny is I don't think Wentz is bad at all. But he's that pro-style type quarterback. They surrounded him with all the different weapons, starting last year with Jeffrey and a couple other guys. But I just think the way they are constructed now is better for Foles. We got guys like Ertz, the quick hot route to the tight end, the screens that run to Sproles, and what's his name, the guy from USC, Nelson Aguilar. I think that their playmakers are more adapted to Foles' skill set than Wentz, for sure.
Yeah, according to Nevada Wolfpack legend Brent Houston, Nick Foles is going to die in this game. So that's some handicap. What quarter, Brent?
If that's the case, he had a charmed life.
He's had a great run.
I look at this game, guys. I have no interest in the Eagles. And, John, I think I echo exactly what you're saying right here. I really think that the Eagles feel some sense of accomplishment. And I know that everybody – you can only hang your hat so far on Nick Foles playing for Carson Wentz. Next year – Week one, who's going to be starting at quarterback?
Michael Vick.
It's going to be Carson Wentz. I look at this. This is the one game where I really think the favorite's going to come out, and they're going to be able to control the game. I think Chicago at home is a monster. Yeah. I think Mac is just going to destroy things. Philadelphia has the 23rd ranked defense in the NFL, giving up 366 yards a game.
Particularly bad through the pass, right? Like with secondaries. Really
269 good. Yards a game, almost 300 through the air. So if Chicago cannot run the ball, I think you're going to be able to see Chicago be able to pass the ball.
I like when the Bears are good.
Guys, number one defense in the NFL. The number one defense
first
in the
year
NFL.
Head coach, too. They go from – it goes to – look what the Rams did, moving on from Jeff Fisher. The same thing. You go from John Fox to, Matt Nagy. A new innovative mind. You go from, 7-9, 8-8, and just being awful every year.
Works.
Suddenly, there you are, 12-4 or whatever they are.
And adding the best player in football.
Just say That's a shout-out rooting. For the self-proclaimed – officious player in Reno. That's you, officious. Andy Joros, he's a poker playing buddy. He's trying to he's kind of talking about all of our props. So he's not a fish. He's tough. I like to engage with props. So with that being said, he likes the sacks over in the Houston Indy game too. So there's some other ones that I like. I can't really throw them out yet because I haven't actually researched them yet. But that's what he likes. So Andy, there's your shout out. But going back to this, let's talk about the Bears. I don't think the Bears are going to lose this game. You might look at maybe a 6-point teaser where you get the Bears into a 2-team teaser situation where you take the Bears. And do you guys?
What do you think about the totals?
The total 41.5.
I think
it goes over.
Under.
Bears can score.
They have shown a
propensity for scoring sometimes,
you know what the Bears are averaging?
Defense is
the one I could see though being 15-12 with all field goals. Yeah. I mean, I'm serious.
Yeah.
All right, let's look at head-to-head stats. The Bears, I can tell you right now, on the year the Bears are averaging 26.3 points a game. Philadelphia's averaging 22.9. In the last five meetings, the over is 4-1, Josh.
All right.
So with that being said, I'm not saying I like. Eagles are, let's see what we got here. I'm looking at these totals and see if there's anything else that really sticks out. The unders 4-0 in the Bears last four games overall. So, I think this defense is really, really going to get after, really, really going to get. What if Nick Foles goes down? You think
they're in trouble.
I mean, here we are talking
who's the third stringer, Sudfeld, right? Yeah. Nate Sudfeld, the guy from Indiana.
We're talking about, a 12-win team, and I kind of echo exactly like I said what John said. The fact that the Eagles
feel a sense of accomplishment by making the playoffs after, you know, they look like they're absolutely
as
dead.
As crazy as that sounds for defending Super Bowl
champion. And if Washington's quarterback doesn't go out, Philadelphia is not in.
Probably, yeah.
But it just so happens that Nick Foles is there, and I just don't think that he has it in him to make another run.
Yeah, but, Ken, but you also think, though, a team that has gone on a pretty memorable run and won the Super Bowl, you really think they're going to have a mindset of just happy to be here? Like, it's a miracle we got here. Now let's just lay down and let Chicago beat us by 21.
Ordinarily, no. I just think at this point, yeah, just from – they were dead. Nobody thought 2 weeks ago the Eagles were going to be here. And so maybe there's also the fact that they're playing with house money and they just let it all hang out. And, you know, they're still as talented as anybody. And I like Doug Peterson, and they're the defending Super Bowl champions. But in this particular scenario, I think the Bears are money right here.
You know, John, we've been to Chicago, and we know how much I hate to say how much they love their football, but it's going to be cold there. They're going to be fired up. So with that being said, we're going to post all of our picks.
Can we go back to Chicago?
Oh, I love Chicago. We're going to post all of our picks on our Facebook. Our board guy likes Chicago, too. He just fist pumped.
Yeah, great.
Josh, give me your three best picks for the weekend. And you can go anywhere across the board. You can go whatever you want.
All right, fine. Then college football game on Monday night, go over between Alabama and Clemson will be one play. I will also go with the Seahawks with the points and Eagles with the points.
What about college hoops? Anything right
tomorrow
off the top?
Is one I just saw, actually, Kentucky -4 against Alabama.
Kentucky.
It's about time for Kentucky to start being Kentucky.
Pretty much. They got a good club this year.
Hawk.
I like the Chargers, Colts, and Bears. And I think the New Mexico, I know it's a broken record with me,
plus 14.
Wolfpack wins and not covers. Yeah.
So you like the plus 14.
I like the plus 14.
All right. Mark likes Texas, Dallas, the Ravens, and Clemson. Texas, Dallas, the Ravens, and Clemson. I'm going to go with the Bama game over. I'm going to go with what Josh and I agreed on with in his Sportsline article with the longest TD over in the Alabama-Clemson game. I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with the Colts, sacks. My number one pick is going to probably be the Colts and the Houston Texans sacks over 5. And I'm going to go with the Bears, guys. I really think the Bears are going to get after the Eagles this week, and I think they're going to be able to control business. Make sure 30 seconds, John. You look like you got something you want to say.
I don't have anything to say.
All right, make sure you like the show at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. You can also get Josh's stuff at Sportsline, and his Twitter account is JoshNagel1. Pat tips off at 5 o'clock tomorrow, John?
Yep.
Pat going undefeated this year, John?
Nope.
I mean, regular season?
No.
How many losses? 1?
2.
All right. Good luck, everybody, in your wagering. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, ESPN 94.5 FM.